The madness has officially begun, and it's time for you to shoot your shot and score big on the nonstop action with MyBookie. It doesn't matter whether you're filling out multiple brackets, betting the national championship winner, or simply looking for player and game props. MyBookie has you covered. Sign up today at MyBookie and use the promo code TASKMASTER to secure a first deposit bonus up to $1,000. It's simple, folks. Put in $200 and play with $300. Just use the promo code TASKMASTER and claim your bonus. College ball, NBA, and UFC, no matter the sport, no matter the minute, MyBookie puts the action in your hands with in-game live betting. And with the choice from thousands of lines and odds, you can turn any game day into payday. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Just don't forget to use that promo code TASKMASTER. Remember, you can bet anything, you can bet anytime, you can bet anywhere with MyBookie. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Possman, the two-man power trip of wrestling. And, of course, joining me is the star of the show, the former WWE and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the man behind the 83 Weeks of Dominance and the NWO, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, JP. How are you, my friend?
I am doing good. It's getting cold again. I don't know what the hell's going on, but we're getting a lot of a bit of a cold spell. Not sure what the heck is up with that.
Aren't you guys going to get snow or something?
So New York got it. We didn't get any, but they were saying we might get some, which is nuts.
Oh, that's crazy, huh?
It's crazy.
Springtime here, so I can't complain. I just can't imagine snow this deep into April, but who knows?
It's interesting with obviously becoming spring and going into the summer. WWE has a bunch of really big shows going on. They have three stadium shows. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. Please tell me about it.
So they have Money in the Bank, which is going to be in a stadium show in Las Vegas where SummerSlam was last year. Then they have SummerSlam, which is in a stadium. And then they have a show in the beginning of September in the UK that's going to be in a stadium. I think it holds 60,000 people, and they're saying that it's almost going to be sold out as soon as they put the tickets on sale. So really, I mean, it's going to be a big summer for them.
What stadium is that going to be in? It's not Wembley, because Wembley holds right at 100. Where would that be? Would that be in Manchester?
I think it's in Cardiff, Wales, but I'll check. I'll check the name of it. I know it's Cardiff, but I don't remember the name of it.
That's Wales, yeah.
Principality Stadium, it's called.
Okay. I'm not big on, soccer, English soccer, but I know a few teams. There must be a big team in Wales, huh?
I believe there is. I'm not big on soccer at all, but I would imagine that there must be have that big of a... that big of a stadium. I just like, wow, like they go back to the UK and man, they go back in a huge form. Like, do you think the business is killing enough where they can do three stadium shows kind of in a row?
you know, they did two, think about this, they did two nights with WrestleMania. And what do you think the actual seating capacity, you know, that they had? What do you think the attendance was for the two nights?
So Meltzer had said the real number was 66,000 and like 65,007, or I think it was 65,900 something and 66,000, something like that. But
where
basically,
where does Dave get these numbers?
He claims he claims the box office itself.
So he has somebody in the box office that tells what to do?
That's what he claims, yeah.
So wouldn't there somebody in the box office be a state representative?
Probably. I know WWE says it's for entertainment purposes only, so they can kind of make up whatever number they want. But he always comes back and says, oh, the real number is this.
So I'm just wondering how he gets that information if it's a state employee.
Right. I wonder as well. Because remember, he was always big on WrestleMania 3 wasn't 93,000 people. Remember, he's very big on that. Except for the fact that if you actually look at, which is pretty simple, Google it, how much people that the Silverdome holds for a football game. So it was clearly sold out. You can see in every picture, clearly sold out. Then all the seats on the field. So you add 80,000 probably to the 13,000 or so in the field. So I do think it was probably somewhere around 90,000 people. I don't know why he stuck on that it was less, but whatever.
Yeah. So they drew, we'll say that's 120,000 people, right?
Yes.
In two nights?
Yep.
Something has, you know, something has really ignited them again, don't you think?
Yeah,
and I'm gonna throw something out there. Is it Roman Reigns? I'm asking that question to you. Is it Roman Reigns? Has he gone 2 years without being defeated?
To me, it seems like every metric and everything points to that direction. Yeah, I mean, he's okay. to me, he's the big star. You know, he's the guy.
A long time ago, we were talking about you know, mistakes that are made, common mistakes. All of a sudden, they stopped passing that belt around. They focused on one guy. How long did Bruno have it?
Right, 1,800 days or whatever, yeah.
How long?
Actually, 2,000, right? Actually, he had one time he had it for 2,000, then he had it for 1,000. Pedro Morales had it for like 1,600.
Yeah. I mean, how long did Hogan have it?
Oh, over 1,000, yeah. Yep.
It seems to me that when they focus on one guy, they tend to get stronger. They tend to have, and I understand, and you and I have talked about this before, about how they want it to be. The focal point is WWE, right? But that's like in boxing, saying, you know, when Tyson was champion, they wanted the focal point to be WBC, you know, World Boxing Council. You got to have a guy that leads. And, you know, Tom Brady is probably the most well-liked and most hated at the same time, don't you think?
Yes.
You got to have a guy that's a winner. And Roman, I mean, let's go back into time. This is very funny to me. Do you remember when The Rock died?
Oh, yeah.
Rocky sucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to, you suck, Roman, you suck. Right? Yet they both became the biggest draws in their time. I think it's that Roman isn't given enough credit. I thought the match with Brock, a lot of people thought it wasn't as good as the first one they had. I think they're both who got hurt, and I thought it was very solid, but Roman came out of there on top. So my thought is, you know, what I've talked to you about, a boat, you know, when it's running, don't take it to the get the tune-up. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Who do you think right now could take the belt for them, JP, and handle it as well as he's done?
Nobody, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think so either. The only one that I see floating out there still, it could be Brock, but he separated himself from the pack, and they got something going with him, and if he goes and sells these three stadiums out, or comes close, they got to look at him in a completely different light and be very careful what they do. You know, it doesn't take long, as you and I have talked, it doesn't take long for a wave to crash over the bow and damage the boat.
Yes.
So, good luck to them. Good luck to them. And I think it's good for the business. And I think we'll make AEW that much stronger, too. Because they got some very good talent there. They got some very good talent. And most of the shows are very good.
It's interesting. I think Reigns is about to surpass Cena on the all-time list. He already headlined more WrestleManias. He's the number one merch guy for a long time. He's been the YouTube guy. If you check the clips, he's number one. All the metrics, the ratings, you know, he seems to be checking all the boxes of the metrics. And it's they have like a common, they want to go in this direction with him instead of Cena, where it was, you know, half and half, half hated him, half liked him. It seems like, okay, half the crowd might hate Roman Reigns, half might cheer him, but at least he's the heel. You know what I mean? He's not like the top babyface. Hogan never got booed when he was the top face, you know? So very interesting. I think Reigns may be surpassing Cena very soon.
Yeah, and I think that is, and in this day and age, not taking anything away from Cena, but how long ago was that really from his run? 10 years? 8 years? Would you say?
His reign probably ended about 7 years ago, I would say, his real reign.
Okay.
I mean, it lasted a good 10 years, but it really probably ended probably about 7 years ago.
And 7 years ago, look how exponentially the growth in social media has been.
Yep.
And the attention span has shrunk. So obviously, and I'm going to say something about Roman Reigns. He looks like a pro wrestler. He looks like an athlete. He doesn't wear a shirt. He looks like a badass. The women probably love him. A lot of the younger guys probably love him. The old school guys probably hate him because he's got everything. I think that they better be very careful of their next move with him and not do anything stupid. I wouldn't get antsy about turning him complete babyface, that's for sure.
I agree.
Yeah.
He seems like he's like he says, he's in God mode right now. So I feel like he's doing great. Definitely the best thing about the show. He's the best wrestler in the world. I mean, his matches are great. His promos are great. His charisma, his look, everything about him. He's just, he's on point right now.
And if they ever have that match, him and The Rock, they better get a big stadium. Hold that thing. That will draw like crazy.
They're saying WrestleMania 39, SoFi Stadium, Rock versus Roman. That's what they're saying. I guess it would be night two because it's a two-night WrestleMania, but it'll definitely be the main event.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so.
Plus, hey, Saudi Arabia. You got to get another big match for Saudi Arabia. Not that that would be it, but, you know, you maybe... I don't know, bring back another legend and put him out there.
I wonder would Rock go to Saudi Arabia?
Doubtful. Seems like seems like he wouldn't.
Yeah.
But hey, but Goldberg has a few times, so you know what I mean? Like stranger things have happened.
Yeah. But I don't think, no disrespect to Bill, that he's the movie star that Rock is.
No, no, definitely not.
So Rock may get some heat from the movie industry if he went to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I know Cena was, they were saying was going to get tremendous heat, so he decided not to go one of those times that he was supposed to be there.
Right. Well, he had to apologize to China, right?
Oh, that was bad, yeah. Yep.
Just was saying Taiwan was a country.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great. And he got a lot of heat, you know, a ton of heat for that.
Yeah. Yeah. On both sides.
Even after he apologized, he got a ton of heat from the other side. Yeah, yep.
Right, yeah, you know, it was somebody didn't give him the right lines to say, and I don't think it was his fault. That should have been really looked at. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yep.
Yeah. I mean, that really should have been looked at because somebody should have caught that. And no disrespect to John, but he probably doesn't. I'm sure he's a very, very smart guy. But maybe he isn't politically astute to what Taiwan is about. You know what I mean?
Yep. Definitely.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think about Cody so far in WWE? He's been doing pretty good.
I think he's been doing damn good. And let me ask you this. Do you think it shook up AEW a little?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I honestly think, and I mean, it could just be coincidence, but they really haven't been as good since he's been gone. I feel like it really shook them up creatively, too.
Yeah, I mean, they did some controversial things on a Friday night, right? I don't think they would have done that if Cody was there. I definitely think he'll come out of the slump, but I think him leaving, they never saw that coming. I don't think they anticipated that. Do you?
No, not at all.
No.
Not at all. And it's funny. I'm looking at all like the marketing. Cody is the face of Monday Night Raw, and Reigns is the face of SmackDown. So, I mean, he immediately became the top guy. It's nuts.
Yeah, it is. It is. I hope they don't rush that match. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I hope they build to that match because obviously they're going to. When I say obviously, I'm assuming that Cody, to make that jump, got some creative input with WWE.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, hey, those three stadium shows we're talking about, that could be the main event of one of them. Right, might as well put that as the main event of one of them.
Say that again. I'm sorry. You broke up.
Oh, you put Cody versus Roman Reigns as one of those stadium shows we were talking about as the main event.
I don't think you need to do that. I think Roman's hard enough. What I'm saying is it'd be nice if you built for a year and really took your time. I mean, why don't you, you know, get as much mileage on Roman and Cody as you can. Put them on cards back to back. Cody goes on right before Roman. You know, build the anticipation because anticipation to me is greater than reality. You know, the old Peggy Lee song, is that all there is after you see it? You know what I mean? Only three things have ever lived up to my expectations. The Mona Lisa, the Grand Canyon, and Pompeii. every other thing, as great as they are, you know. So I think that if they don't rush it, I think that this could go on for be a huge feud for at least 2 years and really milk it. Because obviously they got a lot out of Brock and Roman.
Yeah, months and months of a feud.
Yeah. And you probably could go to the stadium shows with that and different stipulations and squeeze the last of that as you can.
Hey, I would like it. I wouldn't mind it at all.
Yeah.
So as far as guys jumping back and forth and different things like that. There's a guy that did that many years ago, the Monday Night Wars with WWF and WCW, and he's the topic for today, Double J, Jeff Jarrett. When did you first meet or encounter Jeff Jarrett?
I think I'm almost sure. I mean, I can remember meeting Jeff when I worked the Memphis territory for his father for a period of like 4 months. And I always thought Jeff was a very good piece of talent. He learned from the old school guys. He's a brilliant guy. And, you know, he drew money in both places and was very instrumental during the Monday Night War era, right?
Big time.
Probably one of the most influential guys jumping back and forth.
Yeah, I agree. What did you think about his dad, Jerry Jarrett?
Very smart guy. Very smart guy. His father broke away from Nick Goulas when they had a... Nick wanted Jerry to use his Nick son, who was horrible, and use him on top, and Jerry wouldn't do it. Nick was an NWA member. Jerry went against the NWA, and the NWA helped him. Me and Mike Graham flew in from Florida, Jack Briscoe and Jerry from Florida, Holly Race, and the only guy, NWA member that helped, that I can remember helped Nick with the Sheik. So that's how much pull Jerry Jarrett had, that the NWA actually went against a member.
Wow, damn. And I know that they had split up. Obviously, you more sided with Jerry, right? Obviously, I mean, you weren't a fan of the Goulas and the Goulas territory and what he was trying to do with his son.
Oh, his son was horrible. And his son used to come in and it was, I mean, he was horrible. He was a basketball player that didn't make it hit. I mean, you know, he'd been pampered his whole life, entitled. And he would come into the ring, and Bobby Eaton and him were tag team partners because Bobby was such a great worker. And they were called the Jet Set. And Bobby would sell and give him the tag. And he'd come in and start punching guys that looked like they couldn't, punches couldn't break an egg. And he'd say, Daddy said, sell. Daddy said, sell. You sell or you get fired. Oh, he was an idiot.
With Jerry, and obviously, you know, he has so much success. Do you think that when you're the son of a promoter, like not only a wrestler, but the son of a promoter, do you think that you're almost learning more about not just the wrestling side of the business, but the actual like promotion, business, marketing, that side of things?
Yeah, I think you see it in a different light. I mean, you know, I had the unique pleasure to be Mike's partner, and he saw things not just on the wrestling side. He saw it on his promotion side because his dad was teaching him that end too. I'm sure Jerry was teaching Jeff that.
When Jerry, like or Jeff is young and learning the business, it's funny because Eddie Marlin, his grandfather was in the business. His grandmother, Teeny, was in the business as a promoter. I mean, he's like he's got every different aspect of the business like in his blood. It's crazy.
Right, right.
Did you know his grandmother at all?
Yes, Tina, yeah. I worked for her. She ran Lexington in, she ran it for Jerry. She ran Lexington and Louisville, and I'm pretty sure Evansville.
What did you think about her? I heard she was a tough nut to crack.
She was a very nice lady. She was very, very good to me. Her and Jimmy Cornette's mother were dear, dear friends. I think that's when I first met Jimmy, when he was a photographer for them. And she was always super polite lady, but tough, yeah. And had some of the best towns in the territory.
Do you think that when you're like in the family like that, you almost have to go into the family business? You know what I mean? Like your grandmother, your father, you think you have to go into wrestling?
Well, let's go back to what you just said. Look at the McMahons, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Vince's brother didn't go into the wrestling business.
No.
And I met his brother just one time at the Gardens when he came to see his dad. So it's funny. You either have a draw for it or you don't. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And obviously Jeff did. I mean, oof.
Yeah.
It almost feels like he just inherited so much information. And obviously, I think he's a better worker than his dad. But, you know, wrestling, just everything, promoting, marketing. Because he said, you know, sometimes you'd be at the arena and when he was younger, you know, he'd be selling hot dogs or right. flyers or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? He's just ingrained in the business.
Right. And he has brothers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't go in the business that I know of.
I think his younger brother, I think he has said that he like worked behind the scenes, but never really involved like he was.
Right. Right.
But I think he did. I think he was a contractor because I remember Jerry ended up getting into that like line of, you know, owning houses and stuff and real estate. And I think his brother got into the contractor and building. Yep.
Because JJ worked for Jerry when they were building houses.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
Imagine that. You're going to buy a house and want to see the builder, and it's Jerry Jarrett and J.J. Dillon. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
With Jerry, and obviously, you know, working for him and stuff, how was he as a promoter, just like payoffs, working for him? How was he to work for?
He absolutely knew his territory. And he had no other TV coming in against him, which was huge. And if you were in the spot that you got money from, you got paid. The thing that I didn't like about the territory, some of the trips were brutal. Some of the trips were brutal. And other than that, it was a great place for young guys to learn. And if you were a heel, you knew you were going to get a run with Lawler. So you're going to make some money for the time you work with Lawler. And then they put you in a tag match when your run was through with Lawler. And you'd work against Dundee and maybe Eddie Marlin. So, yeah, it was a good – I enjoyed being there for my time that I was there.
What do you think about him and Jerry Lawler's idea of kind of splitting the baby in half as far as booking? Like, one would book 6 months with the other. You like that idea?
It keeps it fresh, but if a guy's got a hot hand, I don't see why he gives it up right away. I think it should be one of those things where you go, you both decide, well, it's time for you to take it because I'm burnt out. Not when you're drawing like crazy. Do you know what I mean? Let it run its course because it's going to get stale after a while.
So when Jeff obviously comes along, he's working in Memphis for his father. USWA. And a little bit of the world-class stuff was going on as well. He's involved with that. He goes to WWF first. When did you kind of have your eye set on bringing him into WCW?
That was actually an Eric call. I thought that he'd be in the WWE forever when he went. Because at one time that I had heard rumors that if Vince had ever gotten convicted on the steroid scandal, that Jerry Jarrett was going to take over for Vince.
Right, yes.
So I was figuring Jeff would be there forever.
Very strange. Seems like Jeff and Jerry, now they have a great relationship, but it seemed like a little bit of a rocky relationship was going on throughout the years.
Yeah, I don't know what caused it, but it happens in most families for a short period, but that was an extended time, so I'm glad that they're all back together.
So Jeff Jarrett, when he left the WWF, basically in the latter part of 95, towards like the summer of 95, it was just, 96, like more towards 96, but he had left earlier than that because of some creative problems, then ended up coming back, but then left again because of some creative issues, because of the whole Double J thing. I don't know if you remember that with the Road Dog was like the real Double J singing With My Baby Tonight, and right. Jarrett had been lip syncing and things like that. So I guess they were going to reveal Brian James to be the Road Dog, to be the real Double J, and they were going to have a feud. And Jeff and Road Dog both said, I thought that was a little too soon, a little too early, and there were some creative differences. So Jeff just basically was like, all right, I'm done here. And you know what I mean? Like they're not going to kind of be what I want to be. So in late 96, he ends up basically leaving the WWF. When you hear that, is that like, uh-oh, this guy might be not a malcontent, but uh-oh, this guy's not happy with creative. I hope that doesn't happen here.
No. Because I could understand. I thought they had a great idea. And if they thought they could get more out of it, they were probably right. You got to realize they're both second generation, right? And if they get together and collaborate on something, usually it's going to be very, very good. And maybe they have a better handle on it than you do. So you better listen to what they say. And before you make a decision, that's going to affect them because you know what's going to happen. You got to weigh the pros and cons and pick your fights. I think if they had came to Eric, Eric would have let it continue if they was in that position. Sometimes management sometimes just wants to show their power because they have it and don't think things out.
And then on his last exit, I guess the first one time he left was because of the Double J thing. He comes back and they have a little bit of a contract dispute. I guess the money wasn't right. And then he ends up leaving. Does that ever kind of ring true as like an issue with you? Like, uh-oh, if they're saying the money isn't right, does that bother you at all as like a booker and as a guy that's going to promote the guy? Like, uh-oh, he might be not happy with money.
Well, I didn't have anything to do with the money, and I always think talent should get paid. And it's up to management and talent to come up with a fair paycheck. And I believe it basics down to simple as this. It's management and it's labor. And management is going to try to pay labor as cheap as they possibly can because they have to have a plus at the end of the year to continue business. Labor has to have a plus to pay for food, transportation, housing, children going to school, blah, 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 and after wrestling. So I think the guys should get paid what they deserve. And if management says this is what they deserve, good luck to the guys.
So when Jarrett's available, you're saying it wasn't really you, it was Bischoff that wanted him in WCW.
Yeah. And a lot of the guys that had been in around Jeff were big proponents of this. Yeah.
I mean, there's other guys that like jumped. Obviously, Luger was like the big one at first that jumped. But this was interesting because it's like, okay, they got Luger, and you know, you get a couple other guys. You know, you get then obviously the two biggies, Hall and Nash, jump. But the Jeff one was interesting because it's like, wow, they didn't really use him right. Let's see how WCW uses him and let's see what's going on. So naturally, he initially comes in as this big free agent, and they kind of tease that he may be NWO, and he said he's not NWO, and it seems like he's more Four Horsemen. Like when you first brought him in, like, did you have big ideas and big plans for him?
Well, at this time, wasn't Kevin having control of the book?
No. So he came over in October of 1996. So you were, okay. Were in full control.
Yeah. Well, this is getting to when he came over. Rick was really high on getting him in the Four Horsemen. So I think it was a good move because he was a great performer, and the Horsemen have always were the working part of the watch. You know, they were the gears that made the watch turn. Everything else was the diamonds and the bezel, you know, the nice looking hands, but the working parts inside the watch were the Four Horsemen. And Jeff would fit in there perfectly. And Rick was really high on Jeff.
So he does kind of like the is he Horseman, is he not Horseman thing. Do you like that storyline? I know we talked about that a little bit before, but did you like the storyline of kind of teasing him and the Horseman? You know, some members want him in, some don't. Like, how do you think about that creatively?
Well, I look back at it now and think, yeah, you were getting too cute. The Horsemen were an integral part of the Monday night show. Why would they disagree? You know, it was like the Musketeers, all for one and one for all, right? You look back and you say, oh, that was a mistake. And to me, if there's a disagreement between the Horsemen, it starts to weaken the Horsemen within, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could do it for a short period, then there has to be, and I'm talking a very short period, there has to be a reckoning where they have a vote on it. Well, maybe I would vote the other way, but if you guys believe it that strong, I'm going to vote for it to solidify it. I look back and say, mistakes were made, and I'll be the first one to say I probably made a mistake. Weakening the Horsemen was not a good thing, especially at this time, because the NWO being so strong.
When he first kind of comes into WCW, like, he does give him kind of a big sense of, like, importance. Like, okay, they got him from WWF. This is a big deal. It wasn't like just some, you know, just run-of-the-mill kind of like mid-card guy. Like, he's upper-card guy for sure. And when you bring him in, they even do a little tease where Sting is kind of teasing he's NWO, and Jarrett kind of says his allegiances are with WCW. Like, what about you, Sting? And he kind of takes a shot at Sting during a promo, and then Sting ends up beating him up at one point, which kind of teases Sting being NWO. But I just thought that was good for Jarrett. Like, Sting is the biggest babyface. Having some interaction, even though he got beat up, like, he having some interaction with the top star doesn't hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. You see it the way it should be perceived. He's coming out and questioning the guy's loyalty, and even if he gets jumped and beat up, he's in the mix right away. Yeah, absolutely.
His first match was against Hugh Morris on 10/7/96 on Nitro. He beat Hugh Morris there. So, interesting. A lot of guys getting their first match on Nitro against Hugh Morris. Is that on purpose?
Yeah, because Hugh was a great performer. Great performer.
His first...
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry.
I was going to say there wouldn't be any mistake with Hugh. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And your first impression, you only get one chance to make a first impression. So that's why he was put out there in a lot of situations like that.
And it actually seems like, you know, you're beating somebody, not like some no-name guy. Like you're beating the veteran. Everybody knows who Hugh Morris was.
Right. It's sort of like what they do with Dolph Ziggler, right?
A lot of times, yeah. His first big pay-per-view match was at Havoc 96, MGM Grand, of course, Las Vegas. He loses to the Giant by DQ. Match goes about 10 minutes, pretty good, but obviously he was like the fill-in for Ric Flair, who was supposed to be in that match.
Yeah, but again, it didn't hurt him being against the Giant in his first pay-per-view. And I
don't
remember the exact finish, but it was a DQ, so he didn't get hurt, and it kind of raised his stature. And he filled in for Rick.
Yep. And it kind of started a little mini feud with the Giant, too, which is great because he was NWO at that point.
Right, and it's following the Horseman, you know, NWO storyline by accident.
And the Giant kind of stole the U.S. title. Jarrett's trying to get it back.
Yeah.
Pretty funny. Like, if you actually look at some of the names that he beats, it's like, wow, he's beating a lot of old cool guys like Ricky Morton on Nitro, Bobby Eaton on Nitro. It's funny. It's like, wow, I mean, that's like what the great, like, old school names to throw out there on Nitro for Jarrett to get good, easy kind of wins over.
Yeah, and guys that he had worked with a thousand times. He could dance to them. You know, Bobby and Ricky were mainstays in the Memphis territory.
Do you think because he came from WWF, he had like a lot of equity just as far as like being like a, hey, WWF guy?
Yes, absolutely. And it wasn't just that. He could work. Just a terrific worker. Terrific performer.
The first really good match that I remember him having was on Nitro against Benoit. It was 11-11-96. Jarrett ends up winning by DQ. But that was one of the things where, like, they're kind of teasing these Horsemen. You know, there's kind of some chicanery going on with McMichael and Deborah and everything else. But it's almost like, okay, you put him in there with Benoit, show him what, you know, he can show the world what he can do. And, you know, pretty damn effective.
Yeah. And it goes along with the storyline about the crack and the Horsemen.
Yes. Did you ever wrestle Jeff? Because I couldn't find any info on that.
I don't think I ever did. No.
Any reason behind that?
No, it's just one of those things. You know, I wrestled every other horseman, but I never wrestled him.
The only thing I could find was World War III, 1996. You guys were in the 60-man battle royal together, but I don't think you ever touched, or I don't think there was any, you know, altercation or anything between you guys. So, kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Then, also on that night, the Giant and Jeff Jarrett have a rematch, and the Giant gets the big victory over Jeff. So, kind of ends the feud there. But, you know, 2 months in a row, you're getting the NWO rub, getting the Horseman rub. I mean, it's kind of got a nice little upper mid-card to main event level kind of feuds going on.
Right. And he's also going against the Giant and holding his own. So it was good for Jeff, I think.
So he's in a U.S. title tournament match. He loses to DDP. But along the way after that, he's getting wins over Rick Steiner and Big Bubba Rogers. And then at Starrcade 96, in a very good match, he defeats Chris Benoit in a no DQ match. Of course, that was in Nashville, Tennessee. That was a great match. That's, I know, that's one of the things, obviously, you're still teasing the Horseman thing, but really, you give him 14, 15 minutes, and he really showed like what he could do. He's a great worker.
Yeah, and that was his home, Nashville. You know, the little suburb outside of Nashville, Hendersonville, where all the country and western stars live. So, I mean, I'm sure he had everybody in the world coming to root him on.
He then ends up beating Benoit on Nitro, beats Arn Anderson in a very big match on Nitro. Arn and Mongo defeat him and Eddie Guerrero on Nitro. He's got a little bit of a, not, I wouldn't say feud, but he's got a few matches against Eddie Guerrero where he's the, Eddie's the U.S. champion. He fails to get the U.S. title, but it all seems like, you know, he's going along at a pretty good pace as far as like who he's wrestling. It nothing where he's getting deep pushed, it seems. It seems to be, you know, floating on that upper mid card level.
Right.
He of course enters in a feud with Mongo, and they wrestle at Super Brawl 7. Jared gets the victory over him there. Did you like the Mongo feud? Because Deborah was teasing that she basically liked Jeff more than Mongo. Did you kind of enjoy like that feud, or do you think it was, you know, a little close to home, like as far as like a marriage on the rocks kind of thing?
No, I liked it, except that it kind of exposed Mongo's limited ability. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It would have been great if Mongo had a little bit more experience. There were times, I mean, you could see where during their matches, as great as ring general that Jeff is, Mongo would get lost once in a while. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Especially if he had taken a bump, a big bump.
He's one of those guys where he wasn't that great in the ring. I mean, obviously, but he had so much charisma and he was always so over, and he had so much credibility from being an NFL player and being on the 85 Bears. Forget about it. I mean, that's credibility through the roof that it almost didn't matter, but it almost felt like sometimes like clunky.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you said the 85 Bears, maybe they're the greatest team of all times, right? I mean, we talked about the undefeated Dolphins and undefeated Patriots, but maybe the 85 Bears were the greatest team of all times. And Mongo's credibility really helped the Horsemen, too, because they were always talk about, you know, athletes outside of wrestling. And Mongo, it would have been great if Mongo had gotten 6 months of training before he came in.
Did Jeff, you think, like working with Mongo?
Yeah, they go along well. They go along well.
Because, you know, he goes to WWF, and when he's cutting shoot promos, he jokes around like, hey, they had me, you know, teaming up and wrestling with a football player. And, like, you know, kind of taking little shots, but in character, of course. But it just seemed like he always maybe felt like, you know, this is a, you know, like what the fans are thinking too. Like, eh, it's a little, you know, not as smooth as it could be, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I'm sure that those lines were given to him to say, too. You know what I mean? Because you got to realize we're in the middle of war. And they knew they had screwed up with the Hulkster and Scheming Gene and that. But that didn't stop them from shooting across the bow like we did, too, you know? But some of them turned into huge mistakes. You remember? You don't have to turn into Raw tonight because Cactus Jack wins the world title. That's going to put a lot of asses in seats. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I knew that was a mistake when they said it.
So him and Mongo, Jared Mongo, they lose to Public Enemy. It's Spring Stampede 97. They lose to Harlem Heat on Nitro, but then they start to get their act together. They beat Harlem Heat on Nitro on 4/14/97, and then Jared basically, you know, kind of keeps on rolling quite a bit, has a very good match at Slamboree 97 where he loses to Dean Malenko. Malenko, of course, defended the U.S. title successfully. Jared and Mongo lose to the Steiner Brothers on Nitro. Then they lose to Harlem Heat again on Nitro in a rematch. Seemed like a best of three there. Harlem Heat won 2 out of 3. Jared and Flair were teaming up on some of the house shows against Harlem Heat. I mean, that must have been a joy working with Flair, huh? He must have loved that.
Yeah. Who wouldn't, right? And they had great matches. They had great matches.
Then on the very big 6/9/1997 Monday Nitro from the Fleet Center in Boston, Mass., Jeff Jarrett defeats Malenko in about 11 minutes to win the U.S. title. Very good match there. What do you think, giving him the U.S. title? Like, was that just a part of the plan? Okay, we're going to give him a bit of a push now?
Yeah. yeah, you know, he deserved it. He had some great matches, and he filled in with everybody. He floated along very well.
So I know we've kind of talked about this before, but do you consider Jeff Jarrett a member of the Four Horsemen?
He would have been if we solidified it the way we should have. But in my head, Jeff needed to be by himself. He didn't need to be the horseman. You know what I mean? It just, in my visual, it didn't look the way the horseman should look to me. And that's no knock on Jeff. I just think there's a certain quality that the horsemen have that you either have it or you don't. A character either has it or it doesn't. And I think Jeff being not in that mold was better by being by himself or with the NWO.
Now, Flair and Arn said he's not a horseman.
Right.
Got to go with them, right?
Yeah.
So better horse.
Kind of what I say, too. You know, there's something about the horseman, you know, you see it, you say, that doesn't fit. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
Who was a better four horseman, Jeff Jarrett or Paul Roma?
I guess Jeff.
Oh, nice. Okay.
But I think, you know, Ole, Tully, Arn, and Rick were the best.
I am kind of impartial to the Barry Windham when you replace Ole with Barry, just because those were like the four best workers. They were just awesome.
Yeah, I would go with that too. I would go with that too.
So he's kind of on the fringe. Obviously, you're saying a good storyline device to kind of keep the horsemen relevant and keep them going while there's a lot of big stuff going on with the NWO. So they're kind of teasing Jarrett in and out of the horsemen. He's officially kicked out of the group, and he starts feuding with Steve Mongo McMichael. And obviously, like we mentioned, Deborah is involved, but Deborah kind of likes Jeff more than Mongo. It's interesting. And Jeff would end up defeating Mongo at Bash of the Beach 1997 to retain the title. And then even he beat Rick on a couple house shows, which is interesting. I didn't know. So, you know, giving him a little bit of a run here with the title.
Right, right. And I think that was Rick's call too. You know, call Rick in and ask him what he wants to do. And he said, let's get him over. So Rick was a big Jarrett fan too.
So he holds the first time around the U.S. title for basically 2 months, and then Clash of Champions 35. He ends up losing it to Mongo. You think that hurts his stock at all? Just losing to Mongo there?
Yes, but Mongo had just re-signed, and he needed something. You know what I mean? This is something you got to take into consideration. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You got the North Tower looking over you. He just resigns. You're going to beat him after the, you know, here's people that don't understand wrestling. They're going to come back to you and say, how is he beat? We just signed him in another 2 or 3 year deal. You got to be, you know what I mean? You're walking a tightrope.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, like, when you do that and, like, he loses, does that, like, kind of signify, okay, his run's coming to an end? Because in October, basically, he has his last match. Is that kind of signifying, like, the end of the run there? Or that wasn't initially supposed to be the end of the run?
That was not initially supposed to be the end of the run. So,
do you think he was unhappy creatively, or do you think that maybe WWF just gave him a better deal this time? Like, because basically October of 97, he heads back.
Yes, I think WWE gave him a better deal, and that we treated him good on TV, so he was a plus going back, and I'm sure they gave him a great deal.
had a pretty good run over there, but he was, you know, IC champ a bunch, never tag team champ, of course, but never world champ. Do you think that kind of bothered him? I mean, he spends 2 years there. He could have been at the top of the mountain. There was some issue with Steve Austin. Austin rather worked with Triple H than worked with him, and obviously the rest is history with Triple H getting a big push after that, and obviously marrying Stephanie doesn't hurt either. But what do you think about Jeff not winning the WWF world title?
That was an awesome call, probably, right?
It seemed like it.
It was something there between them somewhere down the line. Remember, Austin worked Memphis and he starved to death.
Yeah, yep.
He was eating potatoes.
Yeah, and apparently, Jeff, I know Jeff has talked about this before. He made some joke about the check saying, hey, if you stare at it any longer, it's not going to change the number, something like that. And Austin never forgot.
Yeah, not a smart move.
When he returns in WCW in 99, so it'd be October 18th, 1999, he makes a return. So basically 2 years later, he attacks Buff Bagwell. He proclaims himself the chosen one of WCW. I know you're technically not there. This is the Vince Russo turn with the book. Was Russo, like, boys with him? Like, Russo was the one that brought him back?
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
It was good talent. You can't have too much good talent. So, yeah, I thought it was a good idea.
Did you like him getting, like, not right away getting the big push, but all of a sudden when they do the relaunch and we go into 2000, obviously you get the book back with Nash, then you're gone again, Russo and Bischoff get the turn again. This 4/10/2000 Nitro kind of was like the rebranding and the rebirth, and then you had the new blood in the Millionaires Club. But what do you think about him getting the push towards the world title as Spring Stampede 2000 rolls around and he beats DDP for the vacated title?
I mean, at this time, I was kind of out of the picture, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I wasn't paying much attention to it, but Jeff's a great talent and should be in the mix, that's for sure.
Do you see him as a world champion?
In the right situation, yes.
It felt like at that point, like he pretty much deserved it. Obviously, he's probably one of the better workers on the roster. I think he definitely deserved it, but the booking wasn't great because, you know, he'll be basically 4-time WCW champion in the span of like a year or so. Like, you know what I mean? Like the moving around the title too much definitely just didn't help.
Did we talk about this early about Roman Reigns? Why he's drawing?
Mm-hmm.
You don't move that belt around. It's like, when Ali was champion, you know who the hell was champion. Then when Tyson was champion, you knew who was champion. But then when all these other groups started, you were confused. And that's when boxing fell out of the limelight and UFC came in. And until this, the Gypsy King Fury, you know, they weren't drawing anything to heavyweights. Now they're drawing big numbers, right?
Yeah, so got a big stadium shows, yeah.
You've got to have a figurehead, and it's got to be somebody you believe in. If you pass the belt around, we're all even. We're all even. You know, so I think, you know, 4 times in a year is way too much. That's just me. And I think we see the proof of the pudding, what you and I said. Roman's drawing like crazy now.
Yep.
Yeah.
I feel like even if you want to make him, like, you know, the big heel champion, or maybe even the chicken shit heel champion, or the flyer-ass champion where he cheats all the time, you should have had a long reign with it, especially with the new blood trying to take over to give him the long reign. But DDP wins it. David Arquette wins it. He wins it back. Flair wins it. Nash wins it. He wins it back. I mean, it was too many title changes.
You got it. You know, you and I see things differently than some other people.
You think that he was an integral part of the Monday Night War?
Yes. Yes. He's one of the names you recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he was a very integral.
Booking him wise, was it easy? Did he ever give you a problem? Did he ever?
No, never a problem. Easy. Easy.
So obviously, you know, WCW closes. They don't bring him because there's a little bit of controversy. I know we've talked about this before on the show, but a little bit of controversy with the money owed to him from McMahon and Jim Ross and the controversy there. So McMahon publicly fires him on the last Nitro, and it wasn't a storyline. He kind of really was like, you're gone. Double G, double O, double N, double E, you're gone. And then he has basically nowhere to go. He starts up TNA and becomes ultra successful there. Were you ever like just surprised to see like, wow, he started his own company? Not that he's NWA world champion and he's doing great in the ring, but I mean, just as like a promoter and an entrepreneur, it's like, wow,
no,
this guy started up his own company.
No, I wasn't surprised at all because his dad was behind it too. It was out of Nashville. That was a great idea.
Did you think they could compete with the WWF, or you knew like, it's kind of going to be a long shot. It's going to be tough.
I knew they couldn't compete, but they could be in the marketplace and could do well. But, you know, it's hard to compete against that machine. It's hard to compete against them.
So he's multiple-time NWA champion. He would become, you know, really like the face of the company for a while. And then behind the scenes, he was running creative. And obviously running the company, promoting the company, putting his money behind the company. I mean, he kind of did every facet of the business. And then on top of that, he's on screen having great feuds with Kurt Angle and Sting and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles. Pretty impressive, like, just to look at that and say, like, wow, you know, a lot of guys can talk about, oh, you know, I can run a promotion. He actually went out there and did it.
Yeah, you got to give him kudos for that. He did it.
And eventually, you know, years later, I know he's 54 now, but he became a producer for WWE, backstage agent. He's in great shape now. He's just wrestling for GCW. He's just getting inducted into the Hall of Fame in WWE in 2018. So obviously, you know, he was able to mend those fences with Vince, you know, working there and then getting inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yep, absolutely. Good for him. He deserved it.
What do you think is the legacy? Like, if you look back at Jeff Jarrett, what would you say?
He accomplished anything he set his mind to. Like you just said, from wrestling to promotion to marketing, every other thing. And good luck. I'm glad he did.
What do you think about him in ring as far as like worker? Like, how would you grade him or rate him?
An A-.
Hmm.
Great performer. Great. Deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. And it's funny now. He's in great shape. He looks like he's getting ready for another run. I don't know where, but it just looks like he's getting ready for another run just because he's slimmed down and his arms are looking to you. It just seems like he may be interested in wrestling again. I know he's 54, but, you know, Sting's a lot older than him, still wrestling, and Austin just wrestled. He's 57, so it looks like he's ready to get back at it.
I hope so. I enjoy watching him.
Would you think he would ever start his own promotion again?
Anything's possible. Because he has connections in the TV world. Anything's possible.
Jeff Jarrett definitely, I don't know, to me, maybe undervalued, underappreciated, maybe underrated a little bit. Because I always thought a great worker, great hand, just very memorable, and obviously everybody remembers him from the Monday Night Wars and kind of going back and forth, and I feel like that left a big impression on everybody as far as knowing that he was a star.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, do you think the hat and the suspenders hurt him? Like, I believe that Kurt Hennig's outfit hurt him.
Yeah, I never quite got that or understood, like, you know, why like he wanted to. I know, I guess it garnered some heat or got some heat, but I don't know, I never really carefully. It didn't look like main event. When he came back to WCW and had the short trunks, like then he looked like a main eventer.
Right, right. But you had the stigma. It's like Henning had a great body, but he covered it up with the, you know, long tight, not long tights, the
singlet. Yeah, singlet.
Yeah, it just didn't look right. And Jeff always looked in great shape. I just didn't like that whole look.
Almost looked like a male stripper, like that outfit.
I never thought about that, but you're right. You hit it right on the head.
It's a weird look, yeah. I know he's trying to go for like a cowboy thing, but he it almost looks like cowboy meets stripper or something. It's weird.
Yeah.
But Jeff is great. He's a great guy. I know him a little bit personally, or a lot of it, but very good guy, great wrestler. Glad to see he's doing well. He's doing very good. You know, obviously he had some alcohol issues there for a little bit, but he cleaned himself up, and he's doing great.
Good. I'm glad. He's a good guy.
So let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. And you can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. And, of course, go to Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com, and go to the Kevin Sullivan store. Kevin, what else you got going on?
I'm going to be in Daytona Beach Sunday signing autographs at the Ocean Center, the site of the great Hogan turn many years ago when it became the third man of the NWO. So please come and see me, and all our friends that listen to John and I, come out and say hello.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.